Hello and welcome to a football podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined by David Goss and Nick Andrade. This week we chat Forge winning the CPL, Montreal Impact floundering, Gareth Bale back at Tottenham, and an extensive Serie A and Bundesliga look ahead with our guests Gianluca Neschi and Diego Pinzon. Plus, of course, it's the mailbag. It's AFP. David, Nick, how are we doing?
You know, I'm doing pretty well. I feel very light. So it's the Jewish holiday this week, the high holidays. So you start 1 week ahead with atoning for your sins, then you get a week to think about it. And then the end of that week is Yom Kippur, where you lock it all in. So I've cast away my sins physically in the river, the East River, which they say is one of the holiest rivers on the planet. And it's just filled with some of the most gasoline on the planet.
Wait, just behind the Ganges, the East River is...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay, right. It's probably more polluted than the Ganges.
There's got to be like three-eyed fish there, right?
There's a lot of guys in backwards Yankee hats jet skiing across each other to show off for all of the people along the shoreline. It is a scene. It's not the holiest place in the world. But yeah, so that's what I spent my weekend doing. I made my own bread, which was exciting. And yeah, you know, just living quarantine life.
David, what did you atone for? Any secrets that you can divulge?
Yeah, a few things. One, I have to say that over the course of 2019, I did question Alphonso Davies' ceiling. So I atoned for that.
Wow.
As one of my major soccer sins.
It took a lot for you to admit that. I'm proud of you. Yeah. I'm proud of you, David.
I also atoned for my hatred of Lucas Moura. I used to really dislike him. And then I watched the show, the All or Nothing show, and he was like my favorite person that came out of it. So here for that, you know? And those were basically the only two things I atoned for, because I'm a perfect person outside of all of that.
Gotta say, the all or nothing propaganda is working really well for Jose Mourinho, because I feel like his star is shining once again. People love to bants. Gareth Bale is back. I'll save my raised eyebrows for a few minutes. Nick, how are you? How was your weekend?
Great.
Do you guys want to talk about any sins? You can bring those up too.
I'm trying to gloss that over. I'm trying to walk that over a bit, so...
I can't divulge any of that other than I was sinfully happy of Kepa's mistakes this weekend, but
that was so cheesy.
Listen, very good. I'm at the point now where I legitimately feel bad for Kepa. Like, I, as much as we can laugh and joke, and I know he's well paid, to be exposed like that on such a huge stage repeatedly.
He's going to have to go to the David De Gea therapy sessions.
The reform school, yeah.
Actually, maybe he should go to the East River and...
yeah, and cast his sins. I got a good spot for him in Brooklyn Bridge Park if he needs it.
Fantastic. Also, I will say this, last part on Kepa, he will definitely go somewhere else soon and be just fine because he's young. Yeah, and there'll be plenty of soccer left for him. We'll chat about him a bit later. Before we get to the headlines, a big shout out to Taylor, our newest member of the Patreon. Ooh. Taylor is helping us reach our goal of 30. Once we get there, more exclusive interviews with people from around MLS, the CPL, and the sport of soccer in general. So head over to patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join us today. Nick, let's get to the headlines.
Yeah, a lot going on this week, but I want to shout out Sean at the beginning of these headlines. You know, he's been away for a while and we miss him terribly, but some shining hope for him as the Spurs, they signed Gareth Bale. He's back after 7 years. Guys, how do you think this helps Tottenham?
This is the second time that I've whiplashed on hearing something 7 years, because they said Thiago won 7 titles with Bayern Munich when he came on the field for Liverpool. And I was like, that guy's been there for 3 years. And I looked it up and he'd also been there for 7 years. Wow. 2013 was when Gareth Bale went to Real Madrid. So first of all, Sean, congratulations. The prodigal son is home and he's ready to lead you into the promised land. I will say Jose Mourinho is still Jose Mourinho. He wants experienced players. He wants physical players. He wants direct players. He doesn't care what soccer looks like. He just wants to win. And with everything going on at Spurs, I think the lack of depth in their roster in general, any addition that fits what he wants to do is better for them. So there's a potential that he is Gareth Bale, which is he scored 2 game-winning goals in a Champions League final. He while everyone hated him, was still a world class player, is an off the charts technical player, off the charts athlete, and doesn't have to speak Spanish with Jose Mourinho. So I think there's a chance that this could go pretty well to Vang.
Agreed. I think he'll be able to score if he remains fit. I think talking to my Spurs friends, there was a bit of an enthusiasm gap for the club heading into this year after what transpired last season, and that Champions League final hangover really lasting through a manager's dismissal and into a totally new era, really. But I think you saw against Southampton, you still have Son, you still have Kane, you still have world-class talent. You add someone like Gareth Bale to the mix if they go with the trident up front replacing Lucas Moura. Like, that is legitimately terrifying for other clubs, but midfield's still pretty bad. I don't see a lot of game-breaking talent elsewhere on the pitch for Spurs. So I don't think this really changes their calculus for the season, but I think overall this is a fantastic move for them, and he'll definitely be able to play, like, bag some goals. I fitness-wise, how he gets back to playing somewhat regularly will be interesting to see.
But the biggest thing for Spurs, I agree with you in midfield, but Mourinho doesn't care because he just wants to win 1-0. Like, he doesn't need to create a lot of opportunities. But their biggest issue is, you know, Harry Kane's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks. Minimum. And they played Son in there and he was pretty good until he got hurt. Now with Bale, you have more flexibility to play Son in that spot. So I just think it brings a level of depth to that attack that just didn't exist. And they're not going to win the EPL. They're not going probably to get in the Champions League, but they're closer than they were a week ago.
Also, shouts to Southampton allowing the exact same goal 4 consecutive times. Real bang up work there, guys. Way to really adjust to what's going on in front of you. Congrats.
Also, we watched that whole series and Mourinho spent 8 episodes talking about how good Ben Davies is and then went and spent $27 million on a left back in Reguilon. So, yeah, real good guy.
As long as we don't see any Gareth Bale scorpion kicks anytime soon, I'm happy.
Right.
Or bicycle
right.
kicks or scorpion
Epic
kicks
goal.
Or whatever.
Epic yeah. goal.
Still nightmares from that. Forge FC, they won the CPL title at the Island Games. They retained the title. This is their second year. What did you think of their performance?
The class of the league once again. I don't think you could find any fault with the winner of the Island Games when it's all said and done. I think Forge, from the beginning till the end, definitely managed to battle some pretty extreme momentum swings. I think the CPL Island Games overall, just wanted to congratulate everyone involved with pulling this off. I think with the amount of curveballs thrown towards a really new league, just 1 year after they started, to have all of this happen and for them to be able to pull something off, that's incredible. But for me, Forge, I think Forge is one of the few teams that adapted to the way Halifax plays in terms of possession and pressing on them and not giving guys like Sissoko and Rampersand time on the ball or the ability to be the game breakers that they have been. And once again, the best players on Forge were their best players, and that was led by Kyle Becker. So big credit to them. That's 2 in a row. It's a quote-unquote dynasty, but it really is. And I think from top to bottom, it's a great example for how a well-run club can do in this league.
I agree with you, Devang. It's even like they signed Mo Babouli coming into the tournament, and what they'd been so good at last year was making sure every piece fit together. It wasn't just talent for the sake of talent, and they bring in a player like that, I'm not sure how it fits, and he starts in the final and just has brought another level to them. But what's been great about the way they play, and I think you said it best, is the ups and downs. They are a very consistent team. The game is always played in the way they want it to play. They don't chase the game. They don't get rattled by the other team, and they were able to do that in a tournament which wasn't as straightforward as a normal regular season where you have time off to prepare. There's travel. There's, you know, all those things. They came into this tournament and they were still able to be themselves. And they lost a few games early or didn't get the exact results they wanted. And Cavalry moved to a quick lead and Ford continued to play the soccer they wanted to play. And so I thought they were really impressive in that way. And Bobby Smyrniotis deserves a ton of credit because I think they play the best soccer in the league and they do it in a winning way. And I agree with you, Devang, that Kyle Becker is a linchpin for that.
I think if you can make a counterattacking team play possession ball uncomfortably and do it well, it says something about how well drilled their team is. And that's what Forge was able to do in the final.
Guys, who was your player of the tournament?
I think at this point it has to be Kyle Becker. Like we just said, this team is built around him. He drops in. These fullbacks can fly up the field. They give him space. he dictates the passing. On the flip side, he's the one who's spacing everyone and controlling things defensively. There are a lot of good players who had good tournaments. You know, obviously you had the goal scoring for HFX. You had goal scoring and attack for Pacific and Cavalry that all had great players that go up there and are in the Golden Boot race. But for me, Kyle Becker came in with high expectations, and I actually think exceeded those with his ability to play every single game in this competition and play it at such a high level.
Well said and agreed. Akeem Garcia, fantastic. Big shouts to him, but nothing taking away from him. But I think Kyle Becker from beginning to end, I mean, what else could you ask for? And I know there's strong whispers now of a possible move to the Whitecaps in MLS or going back to MLS. But I was talking to David about this off the air, but the turnaround for Kyle and where I think he might have come from the latter time with TFC where it wasn't really going quite well, and to see where he is at now and to be such a vital part of a great club like Forge, it's been awesome to see.
Do you think he should go to Vancouver? Is that the right move?
Not necessarily. I do think MDS might be a good fit, though. Not to say that you should just go to MLS to go to MLS. I'm not saying that. For Bex, maybe. For maybe a player in a different time in their career, I think it's 100% for sure. But I think Vancouver would give him a pretty good spot to start again in MLS because of MDS. But I don't think it's a 100% surefire success thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a coach he knows, he's won under, but he's 30. What's the end game there? You know,
right,
he's not really
right.
Getting back into the national team. I don't know how long he'll stick there. And it just feels like he's in such a good spot in Hamilton. He's the face of this league. It was built around him. He's the face of that team. They've won 2 titles. It just feels like he's found his place. And I'll never knock anyone for trying to push it a little bit harder and say, hey, I want to prove that I'm an MLS starter. And you could see how he'd fit in where Baldissimo's played, that deep lying creative player, hitting those balls wide for Dahomey to run on to and Cavallini over the top. He could fit in there, but it's a tough run with Vancouver right now, so it won't be an easy one for him to step into.
And finally, the Montreal Impact. Well, they couldn't come up clutch against Vancouver, so Toronto makes it through in the Canadian Championship. The Impact then got dismantled by Philadelphia. So question to you guys, what needs to change in Montreal? Or is Henry on the hot seat?
Whoa.
Oh my God, Nick.
Do you want to take this one?
No, this is not on me. No. I've seen the devil and his name is Nick Andrade. I'm kidding. I wanted to say, watching Montreal unable to get that result in Vancouver was just a joy to watch as a Toronto FC fan and completely biased and not neutral. I love that. It was hilarious. Rudy Camacho, thank you, sir. Freddie Montero, the BAFTA is in the mail. I hear you're in the running for an Oscar as well. Just well done all around. But I have a hard time really diagnosing Montreal, David, because I thought I was maybe a little too high on them after the end of that Canadian MLS phase. But I was really disappointed with the effort in Vancouver, although I think once Camacho did what he did, it was no solution at all. And then Philadelphia, just a disaster as well. And Kyoto being such a vital part of that team is, to me, a bad sign, if that makes sense, David.
No, it completely does. I was saying this to someone yesterday, and I haven't really formed my thought around it perfectly, but I think one of the things we're seeing from with the way the season is, one, the season's condensed, travel on the same day, and no crowds, and there's not a lot of factors outside of the game to affect the game, but there's also not enough time for teams to really work on things. I think you're just seeing talent. I think talent is overcoming everything else right now, and you look at the top of the league, and you look at Seattle and the talent that they have, and you look at Toronto and Philadelphia as well, and the talent, I think right now, is just shining through, and there's not a lot teams can do against that. And so you look at the league, most talent is in the attacking side. Money is spent there. That's where DPs exist. And defenders, a lot of times, are young players or college acquisitions or guys that you're finding from South America and whatever that are pennies against the dollar. And that's kind of, I think, what you're seeing happen in MLS. And so in a microcosm for Montreal, Romo Kyoto is the perfect piece of it, which is, when he's on, he's a match winner in MLS. he's on one every three games, maybe. And then one every three games, he's going to do something like this and get a red card and then show the scoreboard to the sideline while it's getting reviewed and he's about to get pulled off the field. And I think that's what's happening to Montreal. And I would say Montreal has talent, especially in midfield with Wanyama and Tider. But I don't think with the way the games are being played, with the lack of training time. I mean, Montreal didn't even know who they were going to play a week ago coming into this game. I don't think that you can build a stable midfield that controls the game and controls the flow on the fly during a season like this. And so I think for Montreal, it's going to be really hard, and there's going to be great days where they beat Toronto FC and you're thinking, oh, this team's ready to turn a corner. And then there's going to be days or weeks like this. And I don't think it has to come down to talent. I think if you give Henry a real offseason to work with this group, then he can get them to play at a higher level next year. But it would be really helpful if they'd go out and get themselves a center forward and someone that they can rely on game in and game out.
And that's it for headlines. When we come back, David and Devang talk to the scorers Gianluca Neshi and Diego Pinzon, Bundesliga Digital Manager of the Americas, to discuss the kickoff to the Serie A and Bundesliga seasons.
Welcome back to A Football Podcast. This week, we're pleased to be joined by the scorers Gianluca Neshi to talk Serie A kickoff. Gianluca, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, guys. How about you?
Doing pretty well. Excited to see Serie A kick off. And just looking at some season preview content around the web. Hey, listen, I love watching old men play soccer, but I was a bit shocked to see how many people were picking Inter Milan to win Serie A this year based on recent history, Gianluca. But I guess the first question is that more about Inter or is that more about questions for Juve going into this year with a new manager in Andrea Pirlo?
I think it's definitely more about the Juve questions. I mean, unless people are super high on 800-year-old Alexander Kolarov being a star this year, and you sprinkle in, Arturo Vidal's like 33, 34 now. No, I think it's definitely questions about Juve, especially with Pirlo and having literally nothing to go off of in terms of how he's going to line his teams up, how they're going to play, and coming off what was, relatively speaking, kind of a mess last year. I know they won the title, but, you know, under Sarri, they conceded a ton of goals. I think the most goals they conceded since they started this title run. So worst goal difference of anybody in the top four, kind of a little bit of a mishmash squad going into the window. They've done a little bit to rectify that, but yeah, definitely a lot of questions around Juve as they look for this 10th title in a row.
Before we jump in fully on Juve, because obviously that's where we're going to go for 50% of this. I know Inter finished second last year, but it felt like it ended poorly, that Conte was upset and the team had lost a lot of the momentum. Where is the energy for people to think that they can contend for a title?
I think Conte is always upset, so that's just the baseline for him, especially when things don't go his way. I think if you're an Inter fan, you have to be pretty excited going into the year. You know, Ashraf Hakimi, for me, one of the best signings anywhere in Europe. This summer, I mentioned Kolarov and Vidal, a little bit underwhelming, but it does sort of signify the fact that they're essentially going all in for this season. They could have signed, a few more younger guys and looking ahead to the future. But I think for Conte, it's a little bit of a boom or bust situation this year with the title. The big thing for them, they kept hold of Lautaro Martinez. Thankfully, Barca have no money, so they couldn't sign him. They kept hold of
all our favorite strikers are safe when Barca has no money. I was like, Abba will stay if Barca has no money.
Yeah. And they kept Milan Skriniar as well. So two real big pillars at either end for them. Stefano Sensi should be fit, hopefully, this year. Nicolò Barella had a really good year for them last year after recovering from injury as well. So if they keep those guys healthy, they should be the main title contender again. Whether or not it's enough to get them over the line, I don't know, but they're definitely the main contender this year again.
It was one game, but I think many people were pleasantly surprised with the lineup Andrea Pirlo fielded in Juve's opener. A young team, Gianluca, and I guess especially last year when you saw a midfield that moved at a glacial pace at the best of times, it was promising to see. And it was Kulusevski, it was McKinney, and even Aaron Ramsey showing out. But it's one game, but what did you take away from the opener for Juve?
Encouraging, that's for sure. You know, the young guys that you mentioned, I think, is the big thing. And there's still more to come from some of the younger guys that they have. You know, you look at this team last year, and as you mentioned, I think Glacial Pace is putting it kindly with some of the guys that they were rolling out. And, you know, so Pjanic is gone, Higuain's gone, Khedira will be gone shortly. Matuidi, as much as, you know, I love him, he's gone as well. And, you know, so we didn't see Arthur yet. I think he's going to play a big role as well in midfield. They all of a sudden go from having a really slow kind of essentially turgid style under Sarri and just passing sideways for 90 minutes to a lot of energy. And, you know, the caveat that it's like you said, one game, literally the smallest sample size. And it was against Sampdoria, who are probably going to be lower mid-table this year. But yeah, I think just a lot of energy and a lot of movement off the ball, which is something you didn't see a lot of last year. A lot of guys that were just standing around waiting for Dybala or Ronaldo to do something. Hopefully it doesn't morph into that as the season goes on. But yeah, encouraging signs so far.
All right, let's get into it. Because Devang set this whole thing up just so we could talk about Weston McKennie. He gets the start. He's probably the best player on the planet right now. He just give him the ball on door here and here. But Betancourt on the bench, Arthur on the bench. The expectations are those guys will join the starting lineup. What is this season going to be like for Weston McKennie?
Yeah, it's a really good question. He was really good against Sampdoria. And, you know, we were joking off the air. But, yeah, he's in the lead for the Ballon d'Or right now, for sure, after 90 minutes.
End it now.
I think, you know, you guys talked about him on a previous podcast just when these rumors were happening and when that deal was coming close. I think he's in a really good situation, actually. He's not the marquee guy there, and he doesn't have to be. He's such a tweener that he does so many things well, but maybe he doesn't do one thing extremely well. Like, he doesn't have one marquee skill that you can point at, but he does a little bit of everything. And I think if you're Andrea Pirlo and you put him in a position where you ask him to get around the field, to cover space, to win the ball back, and to lay it off to some of the more noteworthy playmakers in the team, the more recognized playmakers, then I think that's a perfect spot for him. And, you know, on the back of that first game against Sampdoria, he's already turning into, you know, kind of a cult-like figure, sort of in the mold. I know this comparison's been made a little bit, but sort of in the mold of like Reino Gattuso was, somebody that Pirlo is obviously very familiar with from his playing days. So I think it's a perfect situation for him. You don't have to ask him to do too much. He doesn't have to carry the midfield. Like I said, he's got a lot of, you know, other exciting young players around him all of a sudden. So I think he's in a really good situation here.
Devang, one game in and he's already Gattuso.
I love it. I love, I saw people literally fainting at Weston McKennie's performance. Not able to even embrace the moment. But awesome to see. Don't get me wrong. I'm joking around. But it is frankly still a bit bizarre to me to see these MLS Academy products just pop up in Europe and start playing at this age. And not to say that they couldn't do it, just everything that we grew up with here in North America, I think we were led to believe possibly that it wasn't possible, but it has been, and that's been cool as hell. Gianluca, top four wise, I thought last year, even though Juve did win, like you said, it was very weird. And Inter looking like they would threaten, I thought, was a promising development. But Lazio also played really well. But I have a hard time seeing Lazio repeating that this year. And I think there is an opening possibly for a resurgence from those plucky kids from Milan.
Yeah, those Milan's had some tough years of late. It's, you know, I think they're right in the mix for top four for sure. Obviously, Juve and Inter, barring something ridiculous, should get the top two spots in some order. I don't see any reason why Atalanta shouldn't be great again. You know, obviously they took so many people by surprise last year with just how exciting they were and scoring a million goals in that high octane style. They didn't really lose anybody of note outside of Timothy Castagne to Leicester, who looks like a god at Leicester all of a sudden in the first two games.
Ben Chilwell, who is he?
Yeah, exactly. So, and a couple of interesting additions from Atalanta too. So, it'd be interesting to see how Maranchuk does there. But after that, yeah, I think Lazio, and I know we'll get into this a little bit, but I think Lazio are in line to take the biggest step backwards. We've talked about this many times and my irrational hatred for Ciro Immobile. I just don't
it's
see
not
him.
Irrational. Everything's rational.
It's rational.
Don't give him space.
I don't see him scoring 36 goals again this year, unless he gets, you know, 100 penalties again, so which is possible. But yeah, I think Lazio takes a big step back after a pretty underwhelming transfer window. And I think it's Milan and Napoli right in the mix there for the fourth spot. I think Roma as well. Let's see what happens with Dzeko now that he's not going to get his Juve move and how upset he is about that. Zaniolo's out for a while again with another ACL. Yeah, so I think Milan, even though they haven't done a ton in the window, Pioli righted the ship last year. Ibrahimovic is back, scored 2 goals in the opener. He's going to be playing until he's 65. And so, you know, I think there's some continuity there for Milan, which God knows has been a big problem.
Can I just say, so Ibra came to MLS and was scoring for fun and people were like, Farmers League, ha ha ha. What's happening now? What's going on? What's going on in Italy, guys?
Well, I mean, he's got the magic over 35 striker mantle in Italy. So he can play, like I said, until he's 100 over there in the mold of Luca Toni and Quagliarella and all these guys who just age like fine wines over there, which is such a bad cliche. I'm sorry.
Can we talk about this, though? They played against Bologna in this first game and Palacio still has a rat tail. The guy will die with a rat tail. He'll be bald, but he'll still have a rat tail.
So Palacios and Arturo Vidal are two guys who I struggle to understand how they can go about everyday life with their hairstyles that they have. Like how, at what point does it become too old to rock something like that in everyday life?
So Palacios had that since 2014 at least, right? Because he was rocking that then.
Wow. No, he was living it in Boca. He's had it since like 08. Yeah. Incredible. He's Obi-Wan Kenobi at this point. Because I watched Milan and you mentioned Zlatan, you know, he's the big story, but you look behind him, it's a very young midfield with some depth, a lot of guys that I feel like have been dismissed at other clubs that have been brought in, like Bennacer, who have shown what they can do with this team, Teo Hernandez at left back. Is this a Milan group that can push in to top four? Because in abstract, there seems to be talent, but for Milan, it hasn't always really come together over the course of a full season.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think part of it, again, is what they've done. And part of it is what the other teams around them have or haven't done in some of these cases. You mentioned Bennacer. I love that guy. He is so good at the base of midfield and really just kind of running the show there. A guy who's been linked with the Devang's boys of late and obviously has links going back to earlier in his career. I think he is in line for a really big season. I'm interested to see, you know, obviously Sandro Tonali was their big summer signing. And a boon for them in beating Inter to him. I'm interested to see what Pioli does with Tonali and whether you play him and Bennacer together, whether he thinks you can only play one at a time, and sort of how long it takes him to integrate Tonali into the team. You know, such a young kid that we're talking about. I don't think you want to throw him right into the fire quite yet. So it'll probably take a little bit of time. But, I mean, they've got a midfield there. If they can keep those two guys in particular, that should be great for a really, really long time.
I loved the Sarri-Napoli teams. I liked the Ancelotti-Napoli teams. Is it dead? Is there no more magic left?
Maybe a different kind of magic. Maybe a more robust kind of magic, which is, I don't know if that's the right word, but maybe in the Neapolitan style is more fitting. a little bit more gritty. I think, you know, again, they've got they've retained a lot of the guys that you know they were potentially going to lose this summer, aside from Alan, who was sort of drifting out of favor there anyway with the midfield that they had been rolling out at the end of last season, especially. So I don't think it's perhaps as big a loss as it would have been in previous seasons. Victor Osimhen, I think the most expensive signing in Serie A this summer, at least as of now. Brings a different dimension to their game where you look at a guy like Arkadiusz Milik, who's more of a target man, maybe not the most mobile guy up front. Still a good player and a player that I like, but Osimhen brings a completely different dimension to that team. I think a big thing for Napoli is whether or not they can keep hold of Kalidou Koulibaly. And there's still a couple weeks left in the transfer window for Manchester City to spend another 100 million euros on a defender because God knows they need more of them. So I think if they can keep hold of him and continue to build what they're doing there with Gattuso, then, like I said earlier, I think Napoli and Milan should be in a battle for that final top four spot.
Bennacer, one of the 80 to 90 players that got away. You hate to see it.
If only Arsenal signed everybody they'd been linked with. Right. What a team it would be.
And I think, hey, the squad would have been too big and it's unmanageable. So take that, haters. It's just, it was not practical. We talked top four. We talked about the class of the league in Juve and Inter and what we expect from them, Gianluca. But in terms of surprises from the 2020-21 campaign, Serie A, who are you looking at? I know there's some interesting clubs that are promoted that could cause some problems.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see of the promoted teams what Benevento can do with Filippo Inzaghi as their manager. A guy who has had opportunities in Serie A in the past and they've not gone great, but he's done great things with Benevento. Also, side note, Benevento, the best crest now instantly in Serie A,
right,
with the witch on the front.
Check it out.
Yeah. So
it's a great FIFA crest too, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Very much a create a team type crest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they stormed to the Serie B title last year. I think they were something like 20 points clear of everybody else. So, whether or not that translates to Serie A, I don't know. It's interesting because I don't see an obvious team near the bottom that stayed up that's going to be so bad as to give one of the promoted teams a chance. So I think it's going to be tough for all three of them. Benevento, Crotone, and Spezia. Selfishly, I'd love to see Crotone, a southern Italian team, stay up, but I think it's going to be very tough, especially after what we saw from them in the first game of the season. But I think surprises, I'm looking at Fiorentina this year. Sassuolo had such a good year last year that they've kind of stolen the surprise mantle. I don't think you can apply that to them anymore. Fiorentina, so brutal in the first half of the season with Montella, just a complete disaster. Iacchini came in, righted the ship, and I think they have some really interesting players. They kept Chiesa for now. Christian Kwame is fit again. They still have Milinkovic, and I think Dusan Vlahovic is a guy who, if he gets consistent playing time, all of a sudden they have a lot of forwards. But he's a guy, he scored a few really big goals last year, especially one against Inter that I remember well. He's a guy that if he gets playing time, I think he is someone who could, have that sort of breakout star potential. They got Sofyan Amrabat back from his loan at Verona. He had a good season last year too. So I think Fiorentina, weird to say that they'd be a surprise because it's a team with so much history, but coming off the back of a really terrible year, I think they might be in the mix for your Europa League spot.
Devan, get the purple back out. Let's go. Anytime Fiorentina is good and it's an excuse for me to wear purple, I'm into it.
Best kits. So best kits in the league.
Ribery and KPP are still there. Interesting. I like that. Disappointments, Gianluca, though?
Yeah, I think, again, going back to Lazio, and this is not just because of the Immobile slander. This is overall concern for the state of that team right now. The biggest issue last year with them, they had that great, 21 matches unbeaten. Immobile won the Golden Boot, all these things. They have such a thin squad, and that really obviously came back to bite them in the ass when we came back after the restart and they were playing, matches every 3 days and they just couldn't keep up with it. And you get a couple of injuries, guys need to be rotated and rested, and the team falls apart. They've not really done anything to address that, which is problematic. Obviously, they missed out on David Silva at the last minute, and whether or not he pulled the wool over their eyes, I don't know. But they were obviously really upset about that. Although anytime something bad happens to Claudio Lotito, you can only laugh. So their big signing of the summer, I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, is Vedat Muricki. Based on some YouTube videos I watched, that's how the pronunciation goes. Kosovan striker from Fenerbahce. So it's a weird one because he's a, big body, physical presence, great in the air. I assume they're going to play him and Immobile together, but they already kind of have that with Felipe Caicedo, who does some of those things. And he wasn't cheap, 20-odd million. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting signing for a team that has needs elsewhere and has not really addressed them. So coming off the back of a fair play to them, a great season last year, I think the combination of Immobile not wildly outperforming all his underlying numbers, and the thin squad, I think they're going to be in tough this year to compete for top four again.
Awesome. Gianluca, last question for you. it's maybe the least controversial or the most, depending on how much you rate Romelu Lukaku. But Golden Boot, I thought Lukaku last year, in terms of addressing the various critics spanning multiple continents, in terms of controversial players for super reasons, I think Lukaku's up there just because people are dumb and have some stupid takes about how good he is. But I thought he showed it in 2019-20. I'm picking him to do it again. Are you?
He's awesome. In my notes here for this question, I have Lukaku in all caps. So that's everything you need to know. I think so much of the narrative, I hate that word, but so much of the narrative around him is just based on, you know, kind of jilted Manchester United fans. And, you know, what we see, obviously you get a guy who moves to Manchester United on a big fee, and if he doesn't score 30 goals a season, he's labeled as a disappointment or a bust, which is obviously not the case. There's so much more that goes into it. Yeah, he was spectacular last year. You know, tied the club record for most goals in a debut season with OG Ronaldo. I don't see any reason why, assuming he stays fit, he shouldn't have another monster season. The big thing too for him, you know, he scored 23 league goals last year, and he did it with half the penalties of Immobile and Ronaldo, who finished ahead of him. So I don't see any reason why he's not going to have another huge year. He gets to continue that partnership with Lautaro Martinez, who's still there. Some better players around him should be able to provide a little more service, especially Hakimi from out wide. Maybe Kolarov if he can still get up and down the field at his age. I think Lukaku is my pick as well. As much as it pains me to say something good about an Inter player and to say something good about Inter in general, But I think Lukaku is my pick for the Golden Boot. You have to do it, yeah.
Part of the agreement in having you on, Gianluca, is that we would let you spew the Juve propaganda, but you had to give equal time to the rivals, Inter, and you've done it. So I applaud you, sir. I applaud you.
Fair enough. Do we have another 10 minutes for more Juve propaganda? Or,
no, we don't. We'll
bring you back when we find out if Pirlo knows how many players go on the field as a manager. Wow. Once he's proven that, wow, then we'll bring you back.
I feel like that may be the first thing they teach him in when he was getting his certificates like a week ago.
You think he was paying attention? Even even with what's going on, 100% he's asleep in that class.
Oh, 100%, yeah. As long as he shows up with the nice suit and the tailored look, yeah, and they just give him the badges, they say, you're good to go.
Teacher's pet, surely. Gianluca, thank you so much, man, for coming on. We'll definitely have you back as Serie A gets bumping again.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks a lot.
Coming up after the break, it's our Bundesliga preview with digital marketing manager for the Americas, Diego Pinzon. We're back on a football podcast. This time, we turn our attention to the Bundesliga kicking off as well. This weekend, we're welcoming the digital marketing manager for the Americas from the Bundesliga, Diego Pinzon. Welcome, sir.
Hello, guys. How are you? Very excited to be here. And of course, to talk a little bit about, I think, my favorite, and I not only because I work for it, but definitely my favorite league. And I think one of the most, if not the most entertaining around the world.
I mean, if you're American or Canadian and you like football or soccer, you're definitely watching the Bundesliga. In the Canadian perspective, Alphonso Davies, I think, cemented himself as one of the top athletes in this country. And Bayern as a whole, Diego, what they did last year, they picked up where they left off against Schalke. We have to start with them. How far above are they from everyone else?
I mean, as a fan, you can definitely see that they are just on another level, not only in the Bundesliga, because, you know, there was a lot of the criticism behind Bayern making this big run or always being on the, at least on the round of 16 of the Champions League every single year, that, you know, they are playing against lesser quality teams. But when you see it at the European level, the same thing happened. They are just completely above everyone right now. And I think there's not a team right now in Europe or the world for that matter that can beat Bayern Munich. And of course, you know, in the local level in Germany, I think there are a lot of teams that definitely will give them a hard time during the season. And we hope, of course, that, you know, as a fan, definitely it's what you want to see. But we'll see what happens. I mean, the way they looked as strong as they did against Schalke and the players that they have, they're keeping the core team, adding maybe Sané to that to that mix. And you know, I don't think there's anyone right now that can claim that will stop their run for titles, but definitely I think they are the team to beat for sure anywhere around the world right now.
Adding Sané was unfair, but I want to real quick. Devang said he's Canadian. Alphonso Davies, obviously a star.
Yep.
But it seems like the fever's kind of caught on in Germany as well. What's his perception in Germany? What is his perception in the Bayern fan group? What does he mean in the Bundesliga?
He's definitely now one of the key players for the team. And I think fans see that as well. Not only here in the Americas or in Canada for that matter, but of course also in the US from his past in MLS. But he's the way he just like last season, you know, he won the rookie of the year of the rookie of the season in the Bundesliga last season, although he was not really a rookie because he had already played a few games the season before. But that tells you how much he is now recognized as one of the key players for Bayern Munich, right? And fans have grasped around him as well. They absolutely adore this guy, and they really see him as the next big thing in Germany for sure for Bayern Munich. But interestingly enough, for us here, since we are trying to promote the league and make sure that the league is watching the Americas, we really didn't want to push him that much in the beginning. Just wait to see what he could do, and then you know he proved us.
Yeah,
that he could do much more. not only here in North America, in South America, people are catching up a lot to Alphonso Davies, and the fans are really, really going for it and making sure that they're following him and knowing his story, which is he has an amazing backstory behind him, and it's pretty cool. You know, it's just great to see a kid who has gone through so much and who never gave up on his dream. And now, he's there making it at the big level.
As a former digital marketing man myself, I shed a tear of joy when I see Davies so prominently displayed in marketing material for everyone. It's crazy to me because I never thought that would be possible. And I know that deliberations and considerations, like you mentioned, Diego, like not wanting to project too much or assume that he's going to be great, but seeing it actually come to fruition, it's just been exceptional. If we zoom out a bit from Bayern, Diego, and we look at the other quote-unquote heavyweights in the Bundesliga, I want to start with RB Leipzig just because of who they've lost in Timo Werner and the way they ended their campaign in the Champions League with such a great run. What are their expectations heading into this campaign, and are they expecting a bit of a drop-off?
I think that if you watch most of RB Leipzig's games last season, not only in the Champions League, but also in the Bundesliga and in the Pokal even, they were not too dependent on Timo Werner, which is a good thing. And I think that's what it's going to help them definitely in the end during this season, because they are basically a team that they had one of the top goal scorers in the league and one of the best goal scorers in Germany overall, or in Europe as well. But I don't think they will suffer that much, mainly because they have players that can definitely fill that spot. They're a team that, they basically, they're our version of, tiki-taka, if you will, of a lesser German football, traditional football. They're more attractive. They know how to open up a lot of spaces. And Julian Nagelsmann, I think he has... he's a very well, he has a great mentality of making sure that his team is possessing the ball and attacking quickly. So I think they're not going to suffer that much without Timo Werner, but definitely they will continue the great run that they had last season. I think they have a team that's capable of doing that. And it's all going to depend on who ends up filling that role, it's because that's ultimately what will mean exactly who's going to score those goals. At least they started off pretty strong against Mainz this past Sunday, and we'll see if they are able to keep it up. But I think they have a pretty good chance of continuing with what they left off last season.
Obviously, when you talk title race in Germany, you always come back around to Dortmund and their ability to push, and they haven't lost Jadon Sancho yet, and that's been a huge part of this quote-unquote two-day off season that they've had, and whether or not they can do that. They're young and exciting in attack. They've got quality in central midfield. It feels like this could be their best chance to push since the Klopp championship team. Do you see that for this Dortmund side? And is Giorena the best player in the world?
I think he could be, definitely. Why not? You know, we Alphonso Davies is already the best fullback in the world. So definitely, I think Giorena has a tremendous potential, and he's just, 17? So, you know, the roof is not even the limit for this guy. So I think Dortmund definitely has, it's a team to look out if you want to have someone compete against Bayern at the top of the table, right? They have an amazing team. As you mentioned, they haven't lost Jadon Sancho. Hopefully, I think, you know, from what we've seen on social media, Erling Haaland, you know, talking about him all the time and saying how great of a player he is and what the team actually is doing together, trying to keep him happy, basically. So hopefully he has another productive season. And I definitely see that Dortmund can have a better year than last year. They still keep the core of the team, which is a great thing. Now they're giving more freedom to Gio Reyna as well. He's going to be starting a little bit more, which is a great thing for all of us soccer fans in the U.S. And definitely, I think his partnership with Erling Haaland, Julian Brandt, when he's fully fit, it's going to provide a tremendous amount of joy for all of us. Also with Jadon Sancho, like just seeing those names out there playing together, I think you can have an amazing team. And having the leadership of Marco Reus also when he's fully, completely 100 fit, you know, it's always an issue with him. But I think if the whole team is it's completely fit, and you have someone like Matt Hummels already also running from the back and throwing these quarterback passes from the back, I think this team can take advantage of so many really good players up front that can definitely destroy defense all around.
So you look at the top four, and Leverkusen and Mönchengladbach in there last year. Obviously, Leverkusen loses a Kai Havertz, but what other teams, or is it those two teams that you see contending for those top four spots?
Definitely Mönchengladbach. It's going to make a run for it. They have a pretty solid team. They have very young players, which is great, and they have, you know, for a season this long, it's very useful. They have a lot of stamina. They lost against Dortmund this past weekend 3-0, but still I think they're going to have a pretty good solid team. But I think my pick to at least try to scrape off maybe the fourth position, and this is like my pick to be the surprise team of the season, it's Hertha Berlin. I think they have...
Whoa!
I think they are... every time I say this, they're like, yeah, you're nuts. But but I think they are, you know, the way they are, they were rebuilding after the whole Jurgen Klinsmann debacle last season. They are doing it, even with Klinsmann, they were doing smart things, and they were, trying to fill gaps with players that they actually needed to strengthen the positions in. And I think what they've done this season, it's remarkable. You know, they added John Córdoba. I'm Colombian, so I'm maybe biased here, but John Córdoba, who has had pretty good last two seasons with Cologne, scoring more than 15 goals each season. So I think that's a pretty remarkable add, to have a goal scorer that is physically strong and can not only score, but also, you know, open up spaces for the other players. We saw that this past weekend on the third goal that Hertha scored against Werder Bremen on that 4-1. He basically just held himself up and opened up space for other people. Of course, having as well Mateus Cunha coming into the team as well, that's going to be huge. So I can't wait for that partnership as well to actually develop and have the potential they have. They have Dardai as well, who's another forward that's starting to make a name for himself as well in the Bundesliga. And then you have players that are already there that have been in the team since the past that can definitely prove themselves, like Dillerson, the Dutch guy. This kid is so good. I don't think he has fully developed as a player yet, and I think he will be one of the players to watch. He's only 22 years old. He's been in Hertha since 2018, but he's so fast and he's incredibly mindful of where his other teammates are. So I think the way this team is going to play, it's kind of like, to me, it's similar to what RB Leipzig has done during the past season. So I think they might even fight for those top four, top five positions in the league.
They've been spending for it, and they kind of got a little bit of embarrassed last year in terms of Union Berlin finally coming up and sort of matching them. It felt like, obviously, finishing equal in the table and going head-to-head against them. But I wanted to ask real quick, you mentioned Werder Bremen in that. They were in the relegation playoff last year. They scraped through it, which is what they did all season. It was brutal to watch over the course of the year as Americans trying to watch Josh Sargent. Who do you see in trouble for going down this year? And does Bremen have the ability to stay up again?
I think Bremen might be in trouble for sure. I don't think they have the depth within the team to actually keep up at the level of the Bundesliga. You know, we saw it even this beginning. This is the first match day. Just a 4-1 at home with fans, because they already allowed fans in Bremen for that game. Losing against a Hertha team that's new and still trying to build itself. I think Cologne is going to suffer a lot. They've lost at least two or three players that were key for that team during the past two seasons. So I think that's going to be a struggle. They're going to struggle. They already did so a little bit after the pandemic restart. They were even fighting for Europa League positions before the pandemic, and they all of a sudden they just dropped completely. So I think that's going to also affect them a lot. And I think Schalke is going to have a huge, complicated season if they don't turn this around quickly. Unfortunately, David Wagner, as much as we would also like to have, you know, another American in the Bundesliga coaching one team for sure, I think he's going to, you know, first have to respond by this 8-0 loss against Bayern Munich. But we also saw it during the last part of last season. I think they've lost already 16 games in a row, I believe, or something like that. So I don't think they're going to be in a very strong position to actually stay up. And they struggled a lot last season in the second part of it. So I think they're going to continue struggling this season too.
David, I was going to say, in terms of teams I watched after the restart when football began, Schalke might have been the worst in terms of performance. So I feel like the result on the weekend checked out. And also, when the pandemic is over, I will hold the first Marcel Sabitzer fan meetup, because I thought, even though Leipzig lost Timo Werner, what you said is bang on, Diego, I think there is a lot of talent there. And if Upamecano does stay, they should be a threat for top four again, for sure.
Yeah, totally.
He's staying, Devang. Don't even question it. He signed.
Ed Woodward has his sights set, and you know he always gets his man. He always gets his man, Ed, so he'll be gone.
Dear, I wanted to close you out on one, which is, you mentioned American managers, obviously Pellegrino Matarazzo at Stuttgart, but more than just him, as a big club to come back into the Bundesliga, what does it mean to have a side like that come back into the league?
It's amazing. You know, having Stuttgart with all the history that this club has, it's amazing, because we've had so many really, really good players playing in that team. Having Pellegrino Matarazzo, of course, helps a lot for American audiences, and knowing that you have an American coach coaching one of the strongest teams in the league, one of the most historic teams in the league, at least. So for us, it's definitely a huge run and a huge thing for American audiences. But I think overall, just having Stuttgart with all the titles that they have, with all the former players that they've had, we go from all the way back to Mario Gomez, Jurgen Klinsmann, Pavel Pardo. I don't know. We have so many players that have passed through that team that were huge for Germany in the past. Basically, they were like the Dortmund of the past, I guess, you know, coming out with all of this talent. Freddy Bovic now with the sporting director at Eintracht. So it's a team that can definitely bring all of that flair, if you will, that the league maybe lost when they went down. And I think it's an amazing thing, and hopefully we can see a lot of fans in that venue as well once the pandemic or everything resumes a little at least. And they also have a huge rivalry with Bayern Munich, so it's going to be amazing to see that as well. Because the South Derby, as they call it, it's going to be one for the ages because of all the players basically that Bayern has taken from Stuttgart just as recently as Benjamin Pavard. So I think it's going to be really good. I think having Stuttgart will definitely make the league a lot more interesting because it's definitely another one of the teams to beat. And we already saw Freiburg, who had a very good season at the beginning, at least last year, going to Stuttgart and get a win from there. So, and it was a very competitive game all the way until the end. So I think this team is going to definitely, I think they're going to stay this season for sure. I don't think they're going to go down again. But it'll be great if we can see them maybe in European competitions down the line as well.
Diego, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. I will say, not having James Rodriguez in Bundesliga for you to cover and be around does break my heart for you. But otherwise, enjoy the season. I'm really excited. Looking forward to seeing that next crop of the Kai Havertzes and the Pulisics and whoever else is coming through. The league's been awesome to watch the last few years, and I think this year is going to be the most competitive title race since. So, Diego, thanks for taking the time to come join us.
Thank you, guys. Definitely. And yeah, not having James doesn't hurt that much because he wasn't really fighting for a spot on the team at Bayern. So.
Damn.
But, you know, we have John Cordova. We might get Santiago Arias. Apparently, there are talks of him going to Leverkusen, so that'll be amazing.
Diego's working that from both sides.
Oh, yes.
I like it. You know. I like it.
No, guys, thank you very much for having me. And of course, awesome. Anything you guys need, for sure, I'll be here and to talk more Bundesliga and world football.
Awesome, Diego. Thank you so much, man. After the break, it's the mailbag Ask AFP coming up next.
Welcome back to A Football Podcast. It is now time for everyone's favorite mailbag segment, Ask AFP. Thanks for everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send in your own question, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. First question goes to Mia, who asks, what MLS result this past week was the most surprising to you?
So I think to my point that I was making earlier in the show, every MLS result is surprising at this point to me. It's chaos. Nothing makes sense. And it goes back and forth. But I'll say the Colorado Rapids 2-0 win over the LA Galaxy is a Galaxy team that was flying high. And even if they weren't going to get a win, you didn't think they were going to get shut out. And a Colorado team that's definitely steadied themselves over the last few weeks. Cole Bassett's been a huge part of that. They've moved some other younger pieces in, and now Kai Kamara being traded away. So Robin Fraser sort of refinding what worked for this team, that young, hopeful exuberance. But this was a very professional result. They created opportunities in a number of different ways. Jonathan Lewis, who struggles as a starter, I thought had his best game as a starter in this one from the left wing. And then they were able to lock down a team that brought Chicharito and Jonah Dos Santos off the bench for about 25 minutes. For Chicharito, his return. Obviously, they have Pavone, Efra Alvarez looking super active as well, and Legette and Corona. So this is a dangerous Galaxy team that has found their feet, has played really well, brought back Chicharito, and Colorado still got the shutout. So I thought that was a huge result for them. And Colorado, in a span of 9 to 10 days, went from the biggest disappointment to a playoff team in MLS, and hence Devang 2020.
Well said. I had my eye on Colorado as well for this question, but I'll go back to Vancouver. First winning streak of the season, third win in their last four games. This one has not been an easy ride at all for MDS. I think it's been relatively disappointing to this point, but you're beginning to see, I think, the emergence of a real positive framework for this club, and it's based on the partnership that Cavallini and Freddie Montero have formed. That friendship they have seems to be carrying on the field, but Baldissimo has been a revelation. David Milinkovic getting his first MLS goal. I think there's some positive energy around the Whitecaps, which has been an extremely short supply for a very long time. So tip my cap to MDS. I think it's a small start, but it's good to see.
I just want to shout out Brendan Aaronson. He's been cut the last two podcasts, his segments. So I think he's really good and he's going to go to Europe soon.
He knows what he did. He knows what he did.
Taylor from Patreon asks, what Premier League results shock you the most? Do you think Pochettino has a chance at coaching Chelsea or Man United this year?
So I'll start with the second question and say, God, I hope so, because there's so much good young talent on both those teams. And I think they're both about to be ruined by their coaches. And Pochettino, I think, is one of those five or six best managers in the world who can take a team to another level. And that brings me to my answer to the first half of the question, which is Crystal Palace knocking off Man U, but Zaha getting to score two goals against the club that he quote unquote failed at and left and refound his career. And then he gets to knock them off with the owl sitting in the dugout. Roy Hodgson just hooting along, enjoying all of it. So I'm going to say that was my result. And hopefully Pochettino ends up in Manchester United red.
Lamps is on borrowed time at Chelsea. We all know my stance on this. So Poch there makes a lot of sense. To me, the surprise, Steve Bruce has managed to somehow regress as a manager, even though I didn't think it was possible anymore. I thought he had leveled off, but a lot of experts, bloggers, whoever, Twitter people, us, kind of thought Newcastle looked like a solid mid-table club, and some of the additions they made were intriguing, smart, quote-unquote, Premier League buys, but Brighton going to St. James's Park and getting a 3-0 result, I thought was a pretty big surprise for me, and I've always been very lukewarm on Steve Bruce in general, but that was not great.
Tarek Lamptey, our new favorite player at
Fantastic.
The AFC pod.
Fantastic.
I also want to say that I've made a lot of predictions in my life. Very few have been correct, but Leeds United being the most interesting team in the EPL, whether it's good or bad, was the most spot on thing I've ever said in my entire life.
Fulham is going to give up 400 goals this year. I think I am confident saying that.
There wouldn't be a podcast without Nicholas Liverpool propaganda, but oh my God, Thiago. Woo!
Yeah, no, that's a good one.
He's pretty good. Yeah. He's pretty good.
And here we go. Final question that is, speaking of propaganda, David propaganda, Tyler B from Discord asks, how does David manage to keep tabs on all of the CONCACAF minnows, their players, coaches, situations, while simultaneously being deep in grassroots soccer in the U.S. and keeping tabs on all major leagues?
Tyler, that's a fantastic question.
This reminds me of the Mr. Prince question. Your campaign has the momentum of a runaway freight train. Why are you so popular?
Yeah, I just like to say that I was born with this ability and this grace. I want to thank my mother and my father and, you know, God, of course, number one, for giving me the ability. No, Tyler, it's a great question. It is a fantastic question.
It is. It's a great
I would say you have to find people you trust and then just follow them. So John Arnold in the U.S., does a CONCACAF newsletter daily, and he left his job at Goal.com to create something just about CONCACAF. So I would 100% follow him. I have a friend who covers Honduran soccer, David Cicada, who covers Panama, Lasana Lee Bird, who covers Trinidad and Tobago. I'd follow all those people. And then it's just something I enjoy watching and checking in. You know, if I'm watching a random game and let's say, I'm trying to think right now, West Brom, right? And they have Rowan Lee Bird, who plays for St. Kitts and Nevis. Then I go back down that train and I look at the St. Kitts and Nevis team and how they're doing and follow all that up. I enjoy watching CCL. I get an opportunity, luckily, to cover a lot of CONCACAF international competitions. So I've called a lot of these teams. So I've done a ton of research. So I know who their players are and where they are. And when I see their clubs, I check how they're doing and all those things. So it's a lot. I would say this, 100% go check out John Arnold's piece on Goose Hitting taking over at Curaçao and Remco Bisento not even knowing that he was being replaced as the story came out public, released by Curaçao, not even a leak. So that was one of the good ones that's happened recently. And yeah, that's most of what I try and do.
I was joking before, but it is legitimately impressive, DG. And just like we had Gianluca and Diego on earlier, I think when you do have good resources to follow, because there's just simply too much going on in this sport, it's a huge help.
Also, how much soccer do you watch in a given week? Because obviously there's work involved, but like you're covering everything. So applaud to you, my friend.
Yeah, or as sometimes my apartment mates would say, and that means my girlfriend, but I didn't want to call her that in that moment. I call her my roommate. maybe a little bit too much for sure. But it's nice. So one of the things I'll say with a lot of resources, you can kind of like cruise through games now. A lot of MLS I don't watch live. I watch it later on.
We almost segued so quickly into an intervention episode of AFP that I was concerned.
No, Devang. I need to watch more soccer.
More, yeah. The only cure, it's more soccer.
Devang, do you hear this?
It's a pack, isn't it?
It's a pack.
We can't end the show without opening a pack. It's true. Okay? And if there's another hugging and crying card, I'm all for it, which I named the podcast episode last week.
After your run-in with pronouncing Thierry Henry, I'm a bit concerned about what's going to happen here.
When you're reading a question, okay? I love Thierry Henry, okay? He's great. I've watched him since I was a kid. It just happened, okay? And it's embarrassing, and we just got to get over it, okay?
Perhaps it's time for your trip to the East River is all I'm saying.
I need to confess my sins.
Henri was one of those names when I got into soccer where it was like, if someone pronounced it correctly, that meant they knew what they were talking about.
I know, right? Yeah. Because you didn't hear it that often on like the airwaves, yeah.
Right. But the one that people always messed up was, I felt like people called Arsene Wenger Arsenal Wenger for a really long time.
100%. 100%.
That like didn't really know soccer.
I think there was a belief that he coached Arsenal, or they named Arsenal after him. Like there was like the linkage there, but... Marketing, man. Yeah.
This is, I don't even know. This is a big moment. I'm going to skip all these cards. I'm going to go to the two that we have here. Oh my God. I'm shaking right now. We got a Brazil team card.
Okay.
Card, which is awesome.
Yeah. Well, they won the World Cup.
We pulled it, guys.
So there it is.
I think we pulled the best card.
You got your guy?
We got holographic Roberto Baggio.
Amazing. Oh, you came full circle.
The golden rat tail. Let's go.
You know what? We might have to PSA grade this. Like it is in mint condition. I gotta check. It's holographic too. I'm buzzing right now.
We're off Patreon. All of our money comes from the Roberto Baggio card.
Fantastic.
Wow.
Okay. I think that's a fantastic note to end it on. Before we go, folks, a rating or a review wherever you get your podcasts would be absolutely incredible. We're on Twitter @AFootballPod as well as Patreon /AFootballPodcast. Big thanks to Gianluca and Diego for joining us. Nick, for everything you do on the show, including behind the scenes to get it up and live. We'll talk to you next week. This was a football podcast.